Back with Senator Langford here on the morning show. We do have a caller who was patiently waiting while we got through Farm Boy. Caller, what's your name?
My name's Floyd.
Floyd? All right. What's your question for the senator?
Actually, I've gotten two questions. Rachel mentioned about all the false media that's been handed out, and I wonder why the national, along with a lot of the local stations, not counting K101, but a lot of the local stations in local towns, all they hear is the negative stuff. And the second question is, how is Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats paying for all this BS and false media that they're putting out on the national news? Are the taxpayers paying for that, or is she paying for that out of her pocket? You know, is there any way to shut either one of those down or both of those down where you can get the real news instead of all the BS?
Yeah, well, welcome to a representative republic in a very free press and a free speech that people can say what they want to say, even if it's not true. That has been common from the very beginning of our republic, that we've had press reporting at times that was true and press reporting that is not true. So it's just a matter of providing the opportunity for both sides to be able to get out there. And so places like K101 and other folks getting a chance to be able to put out the full story on it does make a difference. And you're right, there is a lot of fake news, and it really does frustrate me. Sometimes it's done intentional, that people just give part of the story, like on this whole Postal Service issue. People are only giving part of the story and not the full story because it meets their political gains on it. And sometimes it's other things. There was a piece that came out last week that Lou Dobbs put out on Fox Biz about me specifically. Chairman Ron Johnson said there's an issue with subpoenas and somebody in his committee was holding up. And so Lou Dobbs runs a story and say, we think it's one of these three people that's actually holding up the subpoena. Well, Lou Dobbs has my phone number. He could have just called. They didn't call. It wasn't me. And so we start getting calls like crazy saying, oh my gosh, are you holding up a subpoena on Jim Comey? I was like, no, I'm not. I voted on that back in June, and it's a public record that actually voted on that. But Lou Dobbs and his team didn't check the facts, didn't get the information out there, and they just ran with the story and caused all kinds of people to start calling my office frustrated on it because they didn't do the story. So whether it's Fox or National News or MSNBC or CNN or whoever it may be, everybody's got to check their facts on it because not every story that goes out there is accurate. And sometimes it just gets thrown out there and people say, gosh, I can't believe that's actually happening. And sometimes you can't believe it because it shouldn't be believable because it's really not true. So just keep checking the facts, and our fight really is to keep the media open, not to try to control media, but to be able to make sure everyone's voice gets out there and gets heard.
Well, and Floyd, nobody's paying for anything. I mean, you asked the question, how are they getting these ads out there? They have some, if they are doing ads, they are paid for by organizations that are funded, like, you know, charity funded or politically funded. But also the free press, you know, we decide what we want to cover. And so you're seeing a lot of that, and they're not paying.
Yeah, well, you know, we do have slander laws in this country, and I'm all for the free press. But if they print stuff that's not true,
yep,
and people know about it, and it can be proven that what they printed or what they said over the air was not true, how come there's no slander charges?
I understand
the free press, but that's, you know, that's just cutting our law's throats.
There are libel and slander are kind of odd things, because people who put themselves in the public eye, for instance, Senator Langford, it's very difficult to slander him or to libel him. And what that means is, I'm not saying it's difficult to do it. It's difficult to legally do it. So that
prove it in court.
So basically people who put themselves in the public eye kind of take a lesser standard for that kind of proof.
And I would tell you on the libel and standard, a lot of the big media groups that end up with a lawsuit on that will settle out of court before it actually gets in court. And part of the settlement is no one else can talk about this. And so though the litigation actually happens, you don't hear about it publicly because part of the agreement is there is no public disclosure because they want to try to protect themselves from getting sued again.
Okay. So that just leaves poor old Joe Blow out here in the dark. believe in all the BS they put out, and no way you can find out about it because nobody can talk about it now.
Well, just on those things, Floyd, the good news is it doesn't sound like they've actually won you over on that one. And so there's a lot of folks that you think everyone believes all this stuff, and you actually talk to your neighbor and they say, no, I don't believe that. So they're trying to convince people of things, but as long as there's an open media that both sides can get out there and both sides can get their perspective out there, that helps everybody.
And it's just if you can get the national media to take the other guy's point of view and put it out there.
Yep.
So we have equal airtime, just like the and I hate to say this, but I'm a Democrat. That I call myself a pod. I'll let you figure out what that means. But it is not. It is a something off Democrat. You know, I'm not happy with Pelosi. I'm not happy with most of the Democrats. And does anybody have any idea how much Pelosi has spent on trying to get rid of Trump? Last I heard, it was something like over or almost $1 trillion just trying to get him impeached.
I don't know if it was a trillion, but it was a lot. And the impeachment process cost the American taxpayers a lot because that is a federal expense to be able to work through that. And so that number will come out eventually, but it's hard to be able to figure because they spent a lot of their time focused in on it. But it's going to be in the billions of dollars.
Yeah, well, it sounds like she's still got a lot of her time focused on him. And right. I mean, you know, the people of the United States voted him in there as president, and I hate to say it, but the damn Democrats have done nothing but fighting ever since he got in office. You know, and then they wonder why he tweets all this stuff about different Democrats and whatnot. You know, so anyway, that's my rant.
We appreciate it. Thank you. And Rachel, that kind of all ties in what he was talking about and the whole who do you believe and what's going on behind the scenes with what you were kind of bringing up. A lot of the stories and especially the disinformation and the lies are coming from Russian-backed media.
Right.
And they're bots.
And but you can't really tell the source. Like if you go to some websites, it's hard to tell who's backing the website, who's backing this news website, what they're... And I don't really know if there's anything you can do about that.
Well, there isn't. I mean, you have to learn to be a wise news consumer. You have to go out and start researching things. Look for .org pages. Look for .gov pages and actually get informed and listen to all news. Some people just live in an echo chamber, and so they only listen and consume what they agree with and what makes them emotional, especially on social media. Social media is not the place to get your news. You can get tipped off on social media and then go and do a little research. But one of the things I'm concerned about is that the destabilizing effect that it has on the public trust when you have so much confusing news that really the disinformation machine doesn't even care what it's putting out there. It doesn't care. It's not even political. Sometimes it's things like the thing that was recently put out about poor Tom Hanks and all of that. That was a very huge disinformation machine. And what it did was it makes people believe it for a second and then they all talk about it. And then they find out they're embarrassed because they find out it isn't true. And what I'm hearing over and over and over again is I don't know what to believe. This concerns me because if you understand, you know, where I've been around the world, a public that does not trust who has been, look at Belarus right now.
Right.
That's a perfect example.
Right.
Nobody there believes that election with good reason,
right,
by the way. But you know, what do you think about this? Do you think we're on the edge of really being in a bad place that
way? Yeah, we are already in a bad place just based on where people get their information. So many people get their news from social media on Facebook, on Twitter, and they just see some picture that looks legit on it, and they think, oh my gosh, that's real. That actually happens. They start sharing it. They like it. It passes around rapidly, and then you find out days later that's not true. It's not true at all. Someone manufactured that picture. Someone manufactured that story. They made it look like a real news story and sent it out. So this goes back to what our moms all taught us. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. You know, you've got to be able to look at what's in social media, even things that your friends are sharing, to be able to look at it and say, just because my friend shares it doesn't mean they also check the facts on this. And we have a lot of disinformation that's out there. The Iranians, the Russians, and the Chinese love doing this stuff. just creating all these false stories. The Russians did it a lot in 2016, and then people are accelerating into it. And what you said on that, Rachel, is they're not necessarily taking one side or the other on any of these issues. They just like it when we fight. The Russians like destabilizing other governments. They've done it to every single country in NATO, every single one. They do this same pattern. It's just if they can get two people to start arguing, even if they manufacture a story to be able to do it, they'll take it because they feel like they're stronger if other people are weaker. And so instead of working on strengthening their own government and their own economy, they're just trying to tear everybody else down. And the Russians especially, I compare to the kid at the schoolyard. You've got two kids on the playground fighting. There's always one other kid somewhere on the playground screaming, fight, 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 fight. And so to try to bring the crowd to it. The Russians are the kid that's out there screaming, fight, 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 trying to get more people to be able to run to an issue. So anywhere they can find division, they just create more and more division as much as they can.
Well, speaking, I don't want to take away your time, but speaking of disinformation and how people feel, let's just go back to the basics of COVID-19 and talk about your take on, there's so many people who still believe this is a complete hoax. And of course, so many people have died as a result of this disease. Tell me your take on where we are with regard to this in comparison to any other flu or anything. People are really struggling with that.
Yeah, I catch a lot of people that say this is just like the flu. People die from the flu. And I was like, you know, absolutely, people die from the flu every year. But it's very, very different in how this virus actually takes your life when it does. The flu is a dehydration issue that eventually your body just shuts down. Your system was weak already. You dehydrate on it. COVID-19 starts as a respiratory illness, you know, shortness of breath, you're coughing, all those things we've heard about. But then after a couple of weeks, if it advances and your body's not able to fight it off, it transitions from a respiratory illness into a blood illness. And you start having multiple strokes in your system. Your organs begin to swell as each organ starts getting inflammation into it, and your organs start shutting down. So it's a really, it's dramatically different than the flu. So when your body starts getting multiple strokes and you have multiple enlarged organs, that's a whole different situation for anyone trying to be able to survive that in the hospital. So the challenge that we have is right now how to treat it, and they're learning a lot about how to treat it, but they treat it different when it's respiratory or it's when it shifts into the blood disease. Some medicines like hydrochloroquine that everyone talks about all the time doesn't work in the hospital, but it does work when it's respiratory. So if you catch it earlier, that seems to be more effective than it does later on that. So people talk about this and say, well, one, it works, and the other, one person will say it doesn't work anymore, and the other person will say it works great. Well, it depends at what stage it's actually in as you go through it. But what I try to tell people is, hey, we're respectful of people in cold and flu season, that we try to stay away from people if you got a cough or a sniffle. The challenge that we have with COVID-19 is some people, their bodies are really effective at fighting it off. You have it, you don't feel like you have it at all. And so literally you can spread it to other people. So just being cautious and just pretending, quite frankly, that you have the flu, and you know how you stay away from people when you have the flu. You just kind of keep your distance from folks. There's nothing wrong with that at this point. And just do an extra hand washing and all those things, because the hard part is you just don't know. But I'd never want to give this to somebody else accidentally and for them to experience that if they end up in the hospital and really struggling for their life.
So to be clear, this is a thing.
It's a thing.
Okay.
No, it's definitely a thing.
It's not a hoax.
No, it's not a hoax.
It's not a hoax. And I've had folks that have said it's a hoax. It's just like the flu. It's nothing else. No, it's not a hoax. It's a real deal. And I've talked to lots of physicians and scientists working through this process on it, and not just Dr. Fauci, that depending on where you're on social media, like him, don't like him. But this is a real deal. And as I talk to emergency room physicians and how they're processing and how they're treating it, it's a deal.
Senator, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the country as a whole right now with the Black Lives Matter and all this stuff, the protest in Seattle. What is the government doing to try to, you know, fix this situation where it doesn't go into an anarchy, you know, where we have the uncomfortable conversations, sensitivity training, police training? What's the government doing about these concerns right now? Because it's a big, big problem right now.
Oh, it's an enormous issue. We had a hearing on this 2 weeks ago in a committee on Homeland Security dealing with just with Portland and what's happening in Portland. So what's happening in Portland each day and has been for months and months is they'll have a peaceful protest in the afternoon, which no issue with that. There are still issues with race in America. We should be very forward-leaning on this. And we're Americans. We should know what it looks like to be able to respect each other and to be able to respect differences, but also respect each other's fellow citizens. and where we're weak in that area, let's get stronger. That shouldn't be an issue for us to say, why would I treat someone differently because of the color of their skin, mm-hmm. or a cultural difference, or they like different music, or they like different food? Well, why would I treat someone different based on that? That doesn't make sense reasonably. So for a protest to happen to say, hey, we want to make sure everything stays fair, no issue. But typically around 11 o'clock at night in Portland, the protest shifts. It's anarchists that come in. They're attacking a federal courthouse for a month there. I had folks that were Democrats on our committee said, you know, the federal agents were the ones that were actually causing all the problems. No, they weren't. They're U.S. Marshals and Federal Protective Service stay inside the building. What changed in Portland was the local law enforcement was instructed by the city council not to help the federal agents. And so the first thing that happened was they just started graffitiing all over that federal courthouse. Then they started smashing windows out. Then they took it up and decided they were going to burn the building down. So they were smashing a window out, throwing a Molotov cocktail. The sprinklers would go off and put it out. So then they started working on shutting the water off to the building so then they could burn the building down. And then the federal agents stepped out of the building just to be able to stop them from attacking the building, and they started attacking federal agents. This really, really got out of hand, this. And it was just the anarchists on the street that local law enforcement wasn't arresting and wasn't taking on. We had 277 federal agents that were injured by those quote-unquote peaceful protesters coming in to be able to attack the courthouse. That's not a peaceful protest. Those are folks intentionally trying to come in and be able to do people harm. So what happened there was eventually the state troopers actually came in and set up a perimeter and pushed everything back. Well, those anarchists have now moved from the federal courthouse to now attacking the local police department, attacking the local police union, the fire stations. They're just attacking some of the building. That's anarchy. We've got to be able to actually engage with folks that are just meaning to tear things down or just to be able to steal, or what we saw in Chicago a couple weeks ago when there was a rumor out on social media that there was someone that was shot by police, and so they smashed the windows of Best Buy and stole everything out of Best Buy. That's not a peaceful protest. That's not a statement about race in America. That's just stealing stuff. And so we've got to find ways to be able to balance this out. Now, on the same side, we can't just say everyone that's protesting racial injustice is trying to steal stuff. They're not. Mm-hmm. That's like saying all police officers are bad. That's not true. Are there some bad actors in law enforcement nationwide? Yeah, there are a few. And we should address those issues. But we shouldn't paint all law enforcement officers the same, as some people on one perspective do, nor should we paint all protesters the same. We've got to engage with people how they actually behave and what they actually do, but we should hold each other to account.
And that's what we saw in Oklahoma City. You know, the ones that were really trying to get their point across were the ones that were during the day, and then we saw it shift into anarchy. Yeah. So we're having those conversations with the people that are trying to get the point across, but we're having the issues with the anarchists. So in terms of not making that look like a racial thing where, you know, we start arresting them or imprisoning them or anything, I mean, what are we doing about that? What are we doing to control that anarchy?
Yes, most of that's local law enforcement that has to be done. So on the federal side, federal law enforcement, and as they've been called federal troops, they're not federal troops, they're federal law enforcement. Those folks are actually engaging and trying to arrest people. So for instance, in Seattle, the folks that were smashing windows and throwing Molotov cocktails in, they were just, federal agents were just protecting the building, but they could identify who it was. They would go arrest them the next day and go sweep them up and go try to figure out what's the network. There's a lot of intel information they were getting from those individuals just to be able to figure out where they're planning and what they're planning to be able to do next so they can protect those facilities. We need to learn their strategies of what they're doing. That's a federal law enforcement issue when they're attacking federal entities. But for most everything, it's local law enforcement to be able to engage with that. That's not something the federal government's going to run. We don't want to have anybody in the federal government running every police office in the entire country. That's a local thing constitutionally for us. But yeah, we absolutely should be engaged, not only in conversations. There was a meeting with, you talked about Oklahoma City, with the chief of police in Oklahoma City and a whole group of black activists, just to be able to sit down and to be able to talk about, okay, what can we fix together? To sit around the table, have reasonable conversation, and to say, what are things you're seeing? There are folks that I know, that I've known for a long time, that are black Americans, that are saying, I really have been pulled over for driving while black 6 times. That I'd just be driving in a neighborhood, somebody would pull me over, nothing's going on. Tim Scott, who's a senator from South Carolina, tells me in Washington, D.C., he was pulled over for turning his blinker on too late. And he said to me, have you ever been pulled over for turning your blinker on too late? I said, I had my blinker on. They just said you didn't turn it on early enough. And so he got pulled over. And I said, no, I've never been pulled over for that. He said, well, I have as a black American. He said, that does happen sometimes. He said, we got to figure out how to be able to manage this, that everyone is treated the same by law enforcement and by other individuals, and there's not an automatic suspicion of someone just because of the color of their skin.
And this does happen. It's not, you know, I think that there's an argument right now about the fact that this is supposed to be not happening, that it does, there is no systemic racism. But, you know, I have black family members. And so absolutely, you know, just I've been there. I've seen these things happen where it's just a little too odd.
I did get a text question that kind of fits along with all this. The text question says, since President Trump declared Antifa as a terrorist organization, what are we doing about them?
Yeah, that's actually sweeping up information to be able to find out how are they organizing, what are they doing, what are they planning. If people want to have peaceful conversations, that is protected by the Constitution. If your intent is to plan a destruction of federal property, that's not legal to be able to attack federal property. And so they're working through the system, normal FBI, normal warrants, everything going through that legal process to be able to go through this. So that's an area that we should engage on. And quite frankly, for me as a Christian, I think the church and other individuals that are Christians and people of faith should step out first and to say, what are we doing to work on race in America and to engage? The same as what we're doing on law enforcement to say, let's try to have basic security for every person, regardless of their background or color. But for those individuals that are willing to engage in this issue, you should absolutely engage in this issue and to say, what can we do to be able to help make sure that we're better on the issue of race in this generation than we were in the last generation, and our children and grandchildren are even better.
I got one more question to follow up on that. On the other side of the coin, Senator, the law enforcement. Yeah. There's some bad apples out there.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. So are we going to do anything more for them, like more stringent training to become a law officer? Because some of them just don't need to be on the force. And we've seen that.
Yeah. One of the challenges that we have is that once they're on the force, they get protected by the system and by the structure, whether it be the unions kind of protect someone on their own, or they just kind of get swept under the rug at times. There are several things that can be done, but again, local law enforcement already has the power to do that. We don't have to do it federally. Local law enforcement can already do that. And to say, what are we going to do to be able to help provide greater accountability, responsibility? If I see something, say something, even in law enforcement, to say, hey, this guy was really being rough on somebody that didn't have to be. We got to figure out how to be able to manage this. They deal with incredibly difficult issues every day, and they're not going to get it right every day. I mean, you got a law enforcement officer that just went to the scene of an accident and saw a really horrible, bloody, terrible death on an accident. Then the next thing, they're dealing with a speeder that was going really fast that lied to them immediately about whatever their reason was of the day. And then they're going to deal with three more things. Then they've got a chase that they've got to do. And then they're supposed to be at a schoolyard in the afternoon and be the nice police officer. And I mean, they deal with a lot in the course of a day and just the emotions of it. So trying to be able to help them find outlets to be able to actually know they've got safe conversations that they can have to be able to process through this, especially after a critical incident, finding ways to be able to help provide additional training, finding ways to be able to find additional support for them. All those things matter. So again, law enforcement, they're not perfect human beings, but we should hold each other to account because they're given responsibility by us, by the public, to say, hey, when there's a fight, when there's a challenge, when there's an auto accident, somebody needs to respond, and we're asking you to be the one to be able to do that. So we got to provide them the resources to be able to do it well.
Senator Lankford, thank you. We're coming up. It's 8 o'clock, and I know you've got other things you got to do today. And I mean, I've got probably five more topics we could discuss if we needed to. And I'm sure Rachel has quite a few more that if we had, we could go another hour, you know, and talk about things. But we really do appreciate this opportunity with you. I mean,
thank you.
And I'm sure our listeners do too. It's not much, you know, not often we get to speak to a U.S. senator and listen and get into details. I mean, obviously, often when you call, it's 5-10 minutes, and it's like, okay, we'll touch on these three topics and kind of get not quite the in-depth we were able to get today. So we really do appreciate this.
It was good. And I'll end with asking you the question I always ask you. When are you running for president?
Oh, easy. No. I've got plenty of colleagues that are running towards that house. And I hang out with President Trump at times, and we talk, and I see what they actually go through, and I think, No, thank you.
See, and that's the problem. I think that's a problem. There's folks that should be running for president, but, you know, it's always I've often heard this, and I've said it myself. Sometimes it seems like the people who are interested in running for the president are the people who should not be president.
Right. Sometimes.
whatever drives someone to be president.
It's not sometimes. It's all the time.
All right. Well, again, Senator Lankford, thank you for joining us this morning.
You bet. Glad to visit with you. Thanks.
Morning show on K101 KWOX Woodward.